Ready for a special offer on a print subscription to Premier Guitar? Visit shop.premierguitar.com now and use this coupon, PODCAST15, that's PODCAST15, to get 15% off a one-year subscription to our in-depth coverage of your favorite artists and the coolest new gear. Offer valid in U.S. only, no Wi-Fi required.
Hey everybody, this is Perry Bean with Premier Guitar here in Nashville, Tennessee on what will probably be one of the happiest days of my life, because today we're here with Bad Religion. This is Mike Dimkich. He's going to walk us through his gear.
All right.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Hey,
this
thank
is
you
awesome.
For being interested.
Obviously, if you're watching this, you're familiar with Bad Religion and their nearly 40 years as a band and all this awesome stuff that I'm so excited to talk about right now. Let's start guitars.
All right.
Because you guys are both, you and Brian are both junior guys, right?
Well, you, in a few minutes, you may be disabused of that.
Oh, really? Okay.
But, you know, I can't speak. I'll let Brian speak for himself on that.
Okay.
But for me, yes, juniors. This is the main one. This guy here is a refinished 1958 junior that's had multiple headstock repairs, which...
From you or from before you
No,
bought
God,
it?
Not from me. Okay. I found it in Canada on kind of their version of Craigslist. And we made an appointment to go to the shop to see it. Brian knows far more about identifying repairs and things on guitars, so he wanted to look at it, the headstock and the neck, because that's where they always break.
Common, yeah.
And they didn't have a black light set up there, but they're like, well, we can go to the porno bookshop next door. And they had plenty of those, so that's where we discovered the headstock had been repaired a couple times, which I love, because then if it gets broken, or it's a player's guitar,
yeah.
I can take it on the road. I don't have the kind of money where I can buy museum pieces, and I don't want one because I want to go on the road with it. And if I had a really nice one, I would take it on the road, and it would get dinged up. And it was refinished at some point. It had to be a long time ago.
Because it looks, it's pretty faded, almost has the TV yellow.
Yeah, it's pretty chewed up. And I liked it because it's the Johnny Thunders guitar, but with the Steve Jones custom white finish. So it's basically my two, you know, it's like... I don't know, the Holy Trinity of guitar players, the two are right there in one guitar. So that's one I play 99% of the time.
And that's not a stock P90, I'm guessing.
No,
right?
It came with the stock P90, which is somewhere probably in that guitar vault, I hope. It's got a Rolf in it. And the weird thing is it's actually under the P90 cover. It's a soap bar. So at some point, the four-digit serial number Gibsons, for some reason, they must have run out of the proper dog-eared pickup. And they stuck those in there so you can go in the Les Paul forum. There's a whole bunch of discussion.
So kind of an oddball then, yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
And Brian, of course, saw that when he took the cover off and before going to the porno shop with it. So then this is a late 59, because it's, I guess the serial number would tell, but I don't have a clue about that stuff. But it's got the rounded edges, which I actually like, because they're more comfortable. It's got a massive neck, and it's actually a little bigger than the 58 neck. But Steve Jones has a really nice 58 TV model, and they have the almost exact neck profile. But I don't like skinny necks. I had a 61 when I was in high school that I'd probably be $200 for, which of course I sold to Norman's Guitars for $200. And that had a neck that, I know. I saw him in an Italian restaurant and kind of bitched at him about it. It had a super skinny neck, which always scared me from juniors forever until I realized that they don't all have skinny necks. This one has a big... You know, you can feel it.
Like half a baseball bat.
Yeah, it's a baseball bat neck. And this has a Seymour Duncan Antiquity in it, if I'm not mistaken, which sounds very, they sound pretty similar. I like that. It's got Grovers that were put on God knows when, and they are patent pending Grovers, and they look cool.
They do?
And I actually prefer guitars with Grovers just because I think it looks better. Like, I don't want to buy one that I would have to put Grovers on. Like, I think if I bought a Sunburst, and had $200,000 to spend, I'd still go put Grovers on it and have someone ratted out.
Now, juniors are pretty notorious, especially older ones like that, for intonation issues.
Right.
Do you have any of that? Have you changed the bridges out or done anything
this
to compensate?
This one has Brian would know what it is because he might have even bought it for me when I got in the band. It's got one of those. This is just a standard that's probably not even the original.
Right.
You know, I don't get that bothered about it. If you see us, you would know that I'm in tune. And I just, with these kind of things, you just know where to play and where there's like no fly right. zones. It's not like I'm playing leads up here in A.
Right.
You know, if I play it, I'd play in this position.
The double cut is nice.
Yeah, you can totally get way up there. The necks don't wobble. And they just sound cool because, what was I going to say? I always played Les Pauls, like I had customs and things like that. And when I was in the Cult way back when, their manager decided, like, you can't play the same guitar as Billy. And for some reason, he talked like Christopher Walken. I don't know why. And so the Christopher Walken manager was like, you got to play something else. So I played an SG for a while. And then I'd always liked Juniors and had one when I was young. So I bought a custom shop TV model double cutaway, which I still have. That was great. And I played that thing forever. And then when I got in this band, I was playing that. And then Brian kind of got me hooked again on like spending money on guitars. So, and I've got a gold top back there somewhere too that I don't play much, but.
Is it like just an extreme backup situation?
Totally. Look, yeah. It just looks really cool, so I need to bring it out. It's, this is a 30th anniversary. So it came out in 82. It was my second ever guitar, so I bought it out of the recycler for like $400 from a guy. No, and it was so awesome.
So
and, you know, it's when they finally kind of started doing the proper arch top and the color was correct. And I think that these people like these. I mean, I like it. It's got Grovers. It's got my name written in Sharpie by a tech from many, many decades ago who couldn't tell my gold top from the other guy's gold top, even though they were so fucking different. And he just wrote our names in Sharpie. He was a big stoner. It was.
This looks like it's had a headstock repair as well at some point.
I don't think so. No, it's from hanging. Oh, and also, well, it also. It looks like it fell face first out of the case onto a parking lot, which probably was, that was the same tech who wrote my name. And he works for someone really huge now, so I.
Because we can't name names.
No, so God love him.
What a cool story.
There you go.
That's cool. So is that, are you playing that for certain songs or is it in a different tune?
No, it literally came out because when I'm home, Brian and I will be texting each other. I'm like, I'm going to bring the gold top out, man. And then he'll support me and then he'll send a picture of a guitar. Like guitar dick pics, if I can be crass.
Yeah, I get it.
And then next thing you know, we're both bringing guitars out
cool together.
That we don't play.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then it's just like, no, I'm going to play these things. So.
Are you recording with these as well?
I know for a fact that that one ended up on the record. I think my gold top did. I have a black 74 custom that might have. We brought all the guitars. I might have played. Brett bought a really nice, I think, 56 or 57 single cut, maybe 55, and I might have played that. I don't remember. But the Juniors for sure made it. You know, I'll play whatever guitar someone says, oh, it should have this on it. But I really do like kind of playing the guitar that I'm used to playing.
And, I get that, yeah.
You know.
Sure.
And they sound good, so.
So before we go on to amps and the lack of effects,
yes.
what gauges are you running?
We tuned down a half step, so it's 11 to 52, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
And that was the same. I did that in the Cult, too. So there was no, like, it was always, I mean, it's like having 10s. The gold top usually had 10s at home because we recorded A440. So if I'm learning songs, I'll have to have a guitar at A440. So,
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So these all actually were A440 when we did the record, which
is classic Bad Religion. If you guys haven't heard the new record, you should definitely go check it out. I'm pretty excited about it, man. There's some absolute rippers on that.
We play like, I think we play 3 or 4 of the new songs live. So
yeah, I checked out the Last FM set list. So I'm very excited about the set list.
Okay.
If you guys have a chance to come out on this tour and check it out, you'll be very, very stoked.
Or your money back.
Or you'll want your money back. Yeah.
No, I didn't say that.
Just kidding. All right, so let's move on to amps, because you've got some cool stuff over here. This old Mark II is interesting, because not a lot of people are running combos out and then into a cab for punk rock kind of situations, but I love those old Mark IIs. They sound great.
My whole thing with those is, when I was a kid, when you could buy the Les Paul Jr. for $200, I had like a Blackface Twin that used to belong to the band Poco, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that rules.
You know, I had a, we'd never buy Silver Face. Those, he was like, no, those are bad. You got to get the pre, my mom's boyfriend who taught me to play guitar was really, knew a lot about music stuff. And he was like, no, get the pre-CBS, they're better. So, I mean, in and out of our house was just, you know, Bandmasters, Showman, Super Reverb amps, Twins, all this shit. They were so cool. And
so you grew up playing combos? And
I grew up playing combos because a Marshall was always, you know, considered too loud. So I probably played that Twin until like the mid 80s or so, and then bought, I guess we'll start with this one. I bought this JMP 100 head, and those were the days. I love, it was like $350 probably, you know, Jesus.
Oh, man.
And I found the 60s cabinet for like $300. So that was kind of my rig forever.
Not a bad rig.
No, and then I bought another cabinet. I actually prefer straight cabinets, but this is just what the guy was selling. But I picked up the straight cabinet. I think I probably bought it off Billy Duffy. So I was, for however many years, I was always playing this. This was my main amp in the cult for 100 years. When I got in Bad Religion, this is my main amp. Then we were in Las Vegas, and we went to a guitar shop. And this was there. And I've always liked the combo amps because they have like a groaning, bit of a mid-rangey clang to them. And the Sex Pistols, the Bollocks album, was a Fender Twin with Gauss speakers, and Steve Jones is Jesus Christ as far as I'm concerned for guitar playing. So I always wanted a combo, plugged it in, and also this has the Mick Jones thing, because if you look at The Clash from about 78 onward, he always had two of these, I think, run into half stack cabinets. And it was a pretty good deal, the amp, and you just don't see them and it sounded good. And a friend of mine, actually, Nick Shepard, was in The Clash when they replaced Mick Jones, and he inherited one of Mick's rigs, and he said, oh dude, I had the one with the bamboo, so you know, it covers the Mick Jones, Steve Jones, Mick Ronson, everyone's covered here, and I like those guys obviously. So yeah, I play it through this. I don't use the 12 inch because if the open back thing was going
loud as hell,
everyone would lose their minds because it'd be so friggin' loud. And honestly, the master is at like one.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's not like a Marshall. Once you get past about three, it's all the same volume.
Right, they actually push.
If I turned this to three or four, I don't even know what would happen. I've never done it. So
are you running these together at the same time?
Yeah, we've got a splitter box and just run them A and B. First, of course, my guitars all go through this, my main effects pedal.
This is the one pedal.
Which is a
little TU-2?
Yes, it's a, is that a Boss?
Yeah.
Yes, a Boss tuner. And I employ it, you know, I use it all the time. In between songs, I'll come back here so I don't have to stand around looking stupid. And I can come back and make like I'm doing something important, which I'm tuning, so there you go.
Well, all right, pretty straightforward setup. I guess I have to ask, are you manipulating your volume or tone during songs? Because, you know, there are songs with effects, like the beginning of Sorrow has delay and it's clean and stuff like that. How are you guys, are you just backing off the
Ron,
volume?
Ron, our guy in the front of house, adds whatever's needed. But yeah, I'll back the volume off. I mean, another thing that my mom's boyfriend taught me was like, in effect, like God gave you a volume knob, use it. And that took me, I really don't think I figured that out. You probably started that when I was about 13. And I would say by the time I really got it, I was well into my 20s, you know, and once I got with the juniors, I got even more obsessed with it because you do kind of have to roll it off sometimes during breaks and songs,
sure.
You know, like when there's like a you know, quarter note break or something, you quit whipping on and off.
Because they're a little noisy. Yeah,
they can be. They're not as noisy as people make out. I mean, you know, you'll get with funky lights and stuff, but yeah, I mean, volume knobs are an amazing thing. And the P90s really handle volume knob changes better, I think, than humbuckers personally. They just don't start sounding tinny and weird. I mean, they really, so yeah, if I need to play clean, I just turn the guitar down.
I totally get it.
So simple, it's insane.
It's amazing how many different tones you can actually get out of one P90.
Yeah, I mean, you look at guys like Keith Richards or Leslie West or any of those people, or like Peter Green from Fleetwood Mac and stuff. It's just like, it's this, the volume knob is one of these things that's, it's shocking how many people don't use it. Like when guys have a clean tone, they'll have some amp set up just for it so they're as loud when they're playing clean as when they're distorted. And I always thought that's weird, because usually a clean thing, it's a quiet part of the song.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
The intro to Sorrow is quiet.
Or you could just get a clean boost for that.
then it starts getting too complicated. I start like, well, I don't want that. And I don't want to play clean and loud. It sounds insane. So, yeah, no sounds. Effects. Yes.
Well, man, I really, really appreciate you taking the time. We're going to talk to the rest of the guys.
Awesome.
Have a great show, and
thank you
so much for everything you do.
Thank you so much. Please come out.
All right, guys, here we are on the other side of the stage now with one of my absolute heroes, Brian Baker. Thank you so much for doing this, dude.
My pleasure. This is a main goal of mine, to be able to do a Premier Guitar Rig rundown. I watch all of them, no shit.
That rules, man. You don't understand how stoked that makes me.
Oh, no, dude, they're rad. It's so much fun.
It is fun.
I totally dig it. So.
Man, I wish it had existed when I was a kid, because I've learned so much just having this job that I didn't know as a child. You know.
I learned more from the Angus and Stevie Young Rig rundown in like that 40 minutes than I had in the previous 35 years
insane,
of playing guitar.
Oh.
It's like, it's a great tool. So anyway.
Thanks, I really, really appreciate
Speaking of great tools, I'm glad to be here to show you the stuff I have. That was the tool joke.
I like that. It's very clever. This is your number one, right? The white pickguard
guy?
This is 55?
A 1955 Les Paul Jr.
Beautiful hunk of wood.
Yeah, it's great, and that's really what it is. It's a hunk of wood. There's no original parts left. Repro tuners, Seymour Duncan custom P90 dog ear, which is a ceramic magnet. This is a Glazer bridge.
Yeah, Joe Glazer is an absolute.
Yeah, which is just amazing. It's
a monster.
I was.
And these are amazing because they were actually impossible to intonate before.
I mean, intonation is relative.
It is relative.
Anyway, I mean, if you're going to be nitpicking, you shouldn't have a junior. But I also use a Mojo Tone bridge, which is similar to this, but more
compensated as well.
It's got the same attitude to it, but it looks a little less like a piece of a PRS.
Gotcha.
This just happens to be the best one for live.
Hunkered in, yeah.
The pots, I don't even know what they are. I mean, I assume they're 500K. And it's exactly what it looks like. It's a beaten up Les Paul Jr.
Yeah, man. It's an old resonant piece of wood for sure.
Yeah.
And then this is its sister here, huh?
This is the, it's same exact, like, it's also a 55. I wouldn't call it a backup because I play them both. It really kind of is which one's stable that day. Because these are.
They're very temperamental, sure.
Yeah, they really are. And it's
these
like.
Guys are playing internationally and shit, yeah.
Yeah, and you never know what, I mean, the way the travel could be. Like, they sound a little different. This one's a little bit brighter, but they're very close. And this will be the number one for maybe even a month, and then it won't be. And then that one will go back. It's just, you know, it's a crazy thing.
What is it about P90s that you really love?
The P90 has a brilliance. There is a almost 3D effect that you get with a P90, and it I don't have any effects, and so my clean channel is the knob of the guitar. And when you pull back a P90, the definition you can get a clean sound is just it's just beautiful. I guess it's the nature of a single coil. This is, you know, Leo Fender knew what he was doing. I mean, this is. It's really a versatile tool, and its only downside is it can be the 60 cycle hum can be intrusive or not, and you just learn how to deal with the volume control.
That depends on a million things: power, lights, all kinds of
power especially.
Yeah,
which is a big thing.
The thing I love about juniors and like tellies, it's like these guitars that were created 60 years ago, they were fucking perfect, man. Like, they just got it right the first time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I love
cool.
that people are still playing stuff like that. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, man. It isn't broken. And I guess you talked to Mike.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's rolling too.
Yeah.
So it is kind of weird that we have...
Sound guy hate that or love it?
He tolerates it.
Okay.
He doesn't, I mean, you know, he's amazing, so he can make do with anything, but it is kind of, I don't see a lot of two guitar bands with two P90s going.
That's very rare, actually. Yeah,
but it, I mean, that's how Bad Religion's not that dirty. Like,
right.
we're
pretty
cleaner,
light gain.
Cleaner than you think.
Totally. So, without pedals, before we get into amps, just off the top of my head, I'm thinking, like, there's kind of some effects on a lot of your records, you know, like the beginning of Sorrow is really clean and almost has some delay.
Yeah.
How are you compensating for that live? Or like when you're playing leads, since you're not switching pickups or anything like that,
no.
Is he giving you at the board a little jump or?
No, No, I don't play to effects. I don't need them. All I have in my ears is just exactly what you see here.
Tone is in the hands, huh?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I'd just say that, like, what I'm doing isn't really, you know, groundbreaking. But yeah, I don't need to hear. My clean channel, as I said, is pulled the knob down. I'm sure Ronnie's got some throw on it or something nice and spatial out there, but I don't need to hear what Ronnie's got. Solos, I love playing it just as with as little gain as possible to be able to achieve sustain and have the notes ring. That's kind of how I know I'm in the right spot, and that coincidentally is like right about where a good JCM 800 is when it's totally. The preamp is dimed. So I just do that, and again, that's he does the effects. Because I think the quality of the effects he has at the desk might be a little better.
Sure, outboard gear is going to be way better than
than this thing that I bought at a yard sale with like a 9-volt battery in it. I mean,
I get
and it's
that.
Also less clutter. I mean, it is a punk band, and a lot of times things can happen, and people can join you on stage. You know, it could be a surprise. People you don't know who may have come to the show will come up and say hello and dance around, and so you don't want to have anything to kick over. That's kind of where all this came from. It's like, you know, early punk rock, it's like, well, you can't put a pedal out there because that's the end of it.
Straightforward, yeah, one speed.
Yeah. Now they just kick them over. They don't take them.
Yeah, they just step on them.
They do leave the pedal, which I think is very, that shows how far we've come. Thank you.
Hey, PG fans, got a dollar? Then head over to shop.premierguitar.com and check out our massive ebook collection. We have authoritative titles on everything from DIY projects to lessons in a variety of styles and advice from legendary artists and gear builders. Plus, we release new collections every 2 weeks. Check it out at shop.premierguitar.com.
So were you a P90 guy back in the day with like, you know...
No.
Minor Threat, Sam Hain, I can't imagine, was using P90s.
No, I wasn't. Actually, that kind of brings us to this.
Yeah.
This is a... I have actually got some humbucker guitars out now. This is a... I think it's a 2002 Custom Shop Les Paul Custom. It's just right at about 10 pounds, so it's not in the, like, the give me, you know, mercy weight. Duncan Custom Humbucker. This is actually the backup to another one I bought
this
very recently.
Here.
Thanks, Donnie. This I just got in Chicago and at Chicago Music Exchange. Thank you. This is a R9. I believe it is a Chicago Music Exchange exclusive Kindred Burst with Carmelita neck.
Kindred Burst, huh?
Yeah. What it is, it's a Les Paul Standard.
Sure.
And basically, I just got this last month and... it's awesome, and so I've been playing it all the time.
Sure.
And I probably played it for like 5 or 6 shows. And so I was home for a break, so I went and got the custom because, you know, that's part of being like a big time guitar player. You got a backup.
Yeah,
you got to have a backup.
I want AB guitars and I want a backup. Yeah.
Yeah, I want backups, man. I deserve a backup. So they're the same pickup in the guitar, this Duncan Custom Humbucker with ceramic again. It's great. It's like when I was, most of my time younger, I was Super Distortion guy.
Oh yeah, okay.
Les Paul Super Distortion, that was kind of it, and that still is awesome. I've found that the Duncan one, which also is a ceramic magnet like the Super D, it just seems to be a little less spiky,
a little less ear picky, kind of.
It's hard to describe. There's just a little more that's not the right word, clarity.
Okay.
Individual string clarity. But it still has that ceramic, like, which I love.
Growl to it, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. So, yeah, so actually I've been doing that, and I think, I don't know how long honeymoons last. I mean, I've only been married once, and I'm still totally stoked.
So. That rules.
But I think that, you know, historically, this will be fun, and then I'll play the P90s and just go back and forth. It's just like the amp situation.
Yeah.
It's like, what I feel like today.
Nobody wants to eat the same thing every meal.
Sure. No, yeah. They don't. And, you know, they're really not that, they're just cousins. They're not that far off.
They're not that far off. No. So when you are on the Les Pauls, are you switching pickups for leads or anything like that?
Actually, I do put the rhythm pick on for a pickup on for the lead on Sorrow because Brett played that in the studio. That's Brett on the record. And he played it on a rhythm pickup. It's got that woolly.
That woolly,
that woolly thing. So having the option of a rhythm pickup, which I haven't had for a long time, yes, I do.
I'm guessing this is a Sorrow guitar?
Well,
Or when not necessarily?
I don't like switch guitars for songs. I switch guitars if something's wrong.
Go out of tune. Yeah.
Well, I try to tune it. I'm talking about string breaking.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much. I mean, I can try to keep it in tune myself. Donnie does a great job. Like, they come in tune. It's good. But I like to hold one the whole show, if possible, because, that's the simplest way. And also, it's warmed up. It's the body heat. It settles to where it's going to be. It's like you get out, you play maybe three or four songs, the guitar kind of gets where it's going to be.
Hunkers in, it gets
and if it's well set up and it's a good guitar, it'll stay solid. And it's solid, stable, no fuss. This is all my whole thing. It's just what is the most efficient way to do it. So I don't switch guitars unless I have to.
That's a good way to do it. Solid approach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Less stuff in the way.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I mean, I so far it's been working.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about these plexis here, because I've never owned a plexi, so I've always wondered when somebody prefers a plexi to like an 800 or something, why?
Well, with these plexis, these are both they're the hand wired reissues. I don't know when they made these. I'm gonna guess maybe in the early 90s. I know there's a difference, but I'm not a Marshall guy, so I'm not completely familiar with the lineage. But these both have the Dookie mod, which is like a cascading gain mod.
Oh, like a presence mod in an 800 or something?
Yeah, but now it's more like, it could be like that, but think of these as more to do with like a Silver Jubilee. They you can control the input volume. And so they don't have to be really loud to do the plexi
thing. To break
thing.
Up. Yeah, that's
exactly.
Cool.
And they sound amazing. Yeah. And it's great that they're the Dookie mod, because one of these I borrowed from Billy Joe, like, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and I haven't given it back yet.
So, hey, Billy, if you're watching this, just forget about it.
my sense is that that he probably has other ones.
I would imagine he probably has some.
Obviously, it's welcome to go back whenever. But that was what really turned me on, that loaner, and then I went and I got I went to the same place and had this, and I have another backup.
So you don't have to rattle your cage to get some good tone out of it.
No, know? It's just great. It's hard. It's exactly between a Jubilee and an 800. That's what it does. But you can make these two gainy. So I run the gain. I'm running it like, I don't know, like, what's that? Two o'clock.
Yeah.
3 o'clock, something like that. Yeah. So it sounds great. I love them. And I also.
Are you running them together or is one a backup?
No, they're both both at the same time. Just, AV box.
Sure.
Or Y cable or whatever it is they do. I don't really know what's back there. There was a Layla.
It's probably a Layla AV switcher, because that's what Mike has over there. So I'd imagine.
Yeah, so I do that, and when I have the Marshalls up, I run a brown box, which basically I'm sure you know is like a power conditioner, and it can give you the option of having absolutely perfect power, but at a slightly higher voltages, so the amps work a little better.
Work a little harder.
Yeah, and I run it at 122. I learned this from the AC/DC rig runner.
Right.
Yeah, when the guy's like, well, here's something made in Japan that's the size of a small car, and we use this to run their heads at like what it was, 123 or whatever he said.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, how's an average fella find a way to do that? And
so Trace, if you're watching, thanks, dude.
Yeah,
awesome.
Honestly, I was like, okay, wow, that's maybe there's something like that I can afford. And it turned out that the brown box is an amazing
handy.
Tool.
Yeah.
And which brings us to the Kempers. Even with the Kempers, I have the brown box just kind of running on bypass, because I like to have, it gives me the illusion that the power is cleaner. And I think it might be. I mean, with those, you can't make them hotter, they'll blow up.
Right, you
don't really want to do that. I did not find that out on my own. I read about that on the internet.
So for everyone at home, why the Kempers?
Oh, the Kempers. They started out for fly dates. And
sure, cartage is a
It was really about going, Bad Religion plays all over the world, and we were going to some places that we hadn't been. I think I was going to Colombia in South America. And I think I had a show in Chile, and just worrying about rental gear is like, I'm not into it. It's kind of like, wouldn't it be great if I could just carry what I need with me? And my friend, Krista Makes, who's in Less Than Jake, was the guy who turned me on to these. And he had a couple Kempers, and he's like, if you want to take your amp with you, take this. And I'd never been a modeling guy or profiling guy. I don't mess with it at all. But I got one, and it came to my house, and my gear's in LA, and I live in New Jersey. So I have an 800 at my house that I bought new. I used in junkyard, like non-modded. Like I don't even know how long it's been
since. Straight up 800.
I don't even know how long it's been since it was turned on. Right, like, well, I got this. This is still here, and so I use that amp. I made a profile of that amp, and that's what that is.
It's
that.
With you all the time. That's
it's
so
that
cool.
Same profile. I'm not using any of the cool stuff. I'm not using any effects. I'm not using a noise gate. It's just that profile of my old junkyard head.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's cool. And so I have two. I'm doing the same thing. I'm doing two heads, two cabinets. And so both the Kempers are the same 800. I just tweaked the EQ a little bit, so it sounds a little different. But those are amazing.
And are those going? I know you have cabs on stage. Are they miking those cabs and then going direct as well?
The Kempers always go direct.
Okay.
And then when I'm
so up, nice for your front of house, they must love that.
Oh well, that was a big bonus for him. They're always direct. I know I'm playing Kempers tonight because I'm not looking at mics. That's how I can tell. So that tells me that this room is where he wants to hear that.
And totally.
So it's cool. But sometimes there's a, what's that red box? There's a. Ronnie, what are those? What's that box that you use for mics? For the to get a direct signal. Remember those ones I used to use?
Palmer and a JDI.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What did you say?
I use a Palmer and a radio JDI.
Yeah.
Palmer.
Yeah.
That was the Palmer one was the rad one too. So that can happen.
Which
here.
Palmer. What Palmer made, like, it was basically like a. Something between a almost like speaker emulation before emulation, right?
Yeah.
It allowed you to run direct with a. I've seen a couple of them.
Right.
Live,
well, that's what he would pull for front of house. But I'm got a lot of noise coming off the stage, which is great. I mean, I'm playing no matter whether it's the Marshalls or the Kempers. I'm through the cabinets at punk rock volume.
Totally.
Yeah. Which is cool.
No in ears. You guys are going monitors, old
school.
Well,
I'm in ears.
You are.
Yeah. So I'm kind of spared the permanent damage, but. Yeah, I just, because I have to sing. That's the only reason.
Totally.
And I'm a terrible singer, as Bad Religion fans can certainly attest. So I try to give myself the best shot. And
Absolutely.
That's, the ears are just really the vocal and a snare drum.
So are you going, weird question, because singing with ears can kind of throw you off sometimes. I know it does me. So sometimes I'll pull one out and I'll go one in and one out.
I've been doing ears for a long time. Now I have them both in. I don't ever do that.
Gotcha.
I messed with that. I messed with the ones that are kind of have holes in them so that you can hear things. I tried doing one, and the best thing is to just, for me, whatever level of hearing deterioration I suffer from.
Or which has got to be massive.
My tinnitus scale, you know, where I am, it works best to have them both in.
Both in, sure.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah.
With one in over the course of a set, you'll walk off the stage. With
yeah, exactly.
All
your,
wobbly.
Your balance is totally off. Yeah. But yeah, so that's really the whole story. So it's basically what we've learned, that this is a system that can change on a day-to-day basis. And tonight, Nashville will be enjoying a humbucker Les Paul with the Kempers. And I really don't know what Austin's going to get. It could be a whole different
thing. Could be a different situation.
A whole different thing.
Brian, before I let you go, I just want to ask you one more question.
Yeah.
You've been doing this a long time. Bad Religion has been a band a long, long time.
Yeah.
Has it ever come full circle that a band that was super influenced by Bad Religion, say like, you know, Strike Anywhere or something like that, is actually influencing your playing?
That's a great question, and you know, I'm going to have to say this is kind of weird, but I would say that I'm more influenced by people who kind of took that Dag Nasty thing.
Okay.
At least as far as my playing, stylistically, I've recently been opening up to a lot of this these sort of arpeggiated ringing string things that I used to do when I was in my 20s in this band Dag Nasty, which is the band. I guess the most known.
This little band called Dag Nasty.
Well, no, I mean, it's, if you're not a student of the genre.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, it was my most significant act prior to Bad Religion. And so I've been kind of seeing that style, and it's, you're just not going to, I mean, it's really, a lot of it is Matt Skiba, who's an amazing guitar player. And I love Matt in Alkaline, but also in Blink. You know, there's a lot of kind of Dag Nasty flow in Blink.
There is, yeah.
And so just watching Matt, and I'm like, oh, you know, I should ring these strings more. I need to do, you know, less wood chopping and a little more sanding. So that he's a good example.
Yeah, great example. And hey, Skiba, if you're watching this, let's do a rundown, dude. Huge fan.
Oh, I can hook you up.
Okay, cool.
No worries. Yeah.
Brian Baker, I absolutely appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Of course.
I'm absolutely honored to be able to talk to you about my favorite shit in the world, guitars and punk rock. So.
Well, those are my favorite things too. So we're gonna get along great after this is over.
Sweet. All right.
Cool. All right.
Cool.
Thanks.
Last but not least, we got Jay Bentley.
Last least
punk rock royalty here, everybody. One of the co-founding members of Bad Religion.
Tallest
member of Bad Religion. Way taller than me. Fucking cool jeans, bud. Awesome. Let's talk.
They're not jeans, they're chinos.
All right, so we got some bitchin' P basses here. In the past, though, I've seen you play Epiphones. You had a Jack Cassidy sig, right?
I did. The Epiphone came about because I was playing a 1980 Schecter, a real Van Nuys Schecter. And I didn't realize until I started to wear it down that it was actually this crazy slab of mahogany. And I think it weighed 16 pounds. So I was always like, oh, my back, oh, my back, oh, my back. And Baker got totally so tired of me talking about my back that he bought the Jack Cassidy like as a goof and
like
a punishment for me.
Right.
So it shows up. He's like, oh, I bought you a new guitar. I'm like, is this a joke? Okay, and I played it, and I go, this is not so bad. The pickup is whatever. But so I played it, and then Brian's like, well, you're not really going to play that. And then I played it for 5 years for spite, just because it made him so mad that I kept playing
it. What a fun little fuck
like,
you.
He's like, you can't keep playing that. I go, oh, but I'm going to.
Let front of house deal with it. It's
yeah, and then I changed the pickups and tore it all apart.
Sure. You had to stuff a bunch of foam in it and shit.
No, it never did what you thought it would do.
Really?
It never fed back. It was a really great guitar, just the wrong pickup for punk rock.
Sure. No, I get it. Yeah, well, speaking of, you know, when I think of punk rock, I guess you kind of wrote the book on modern punk tones, but a P bass is always the thing that I think of.
It is. For me, it is.
Yeah.
And I think that what I found over the years was, for myself, it's an Ash Body Maple Neck. A DiMarzio DP-122 pickup was sort of this beginning sound that worked well with at the time was Brett and Greg Hetson and Les Pauls and humbuckers.
Sure.
And when Mike came in and brought in the P90s and Brian switched over to P90s, and then it was like this sound was no longer really appropriate with those two guitars because
gotcha.
They were a little more shrill and I had to tone down a lot. So instead of really trying to reinvent my guitar, I reinvented my rig.
And I see that because in the past I've seen you with SVTs and
right.
You know,
so it was there was. The rig change was sort of twofold. One, the most honest answer I can give is when you're an endorsee and you're playing a product and you're sort of telling people out there that you endorse this product and that product is constantly failing and costing me a lot of money to repair, and I'm thinking people work really hard for a long time to go buy this rig and then they've got to repair it like I do.
Right.
I can afford it because
I'm
on the road.
Bad religion.
And so I actually felt bad endorsing that product and said I need something new, and I wanted solid state because I said I'm just like, you know, tubes are cool but expensive and they're boutique and they're neat if you're at home, but take them out on the road and it's tough.
It's a pain.
So I spent a lot of time trying to find the right solid state amp. Class D was right out, and the ABs. Once I started playing this model of Orange, the four-stroke, I just started to fall more and more in love with it. And then I talked to Alex at Orange, and he goes, oh, we're discontinuing that model. And I go, I'm going to buy them all.
Okay, give me all you got.
But then I guess enough people sort of, I think this was in conjunction with Steve Harris, was the design of this, was what I got. Was like they were working together with this, and then they just kind of, they were going to scrap the project. But I guess a few more people got into this amp, which I think is one of the best solid state amps.
It's funny to see the battle between solid state and tube amps come and go. Because when I was a kid, it was like you did not play solid state shit. And now there are so many great solid state amps coming out. It's like, you know, the tons of guys that played solid state stuff. Sounds that you've heard your whole life, the Melvins.
I mean, well, yeah, I think the thing is that when you talk about like a Fender P bass as the epitome of a sound of a rock and roll bass
sound,
guitar,
yeah.
That SVT classic head and 810 cabinet is the classic sound of what you want a bass guitar to be. But you're entering into the vintage world where like if you want to do that, then you need to go buy a 70s rig,
right?
Because that's that sound. Anything new isn't that sound. And you're like, why isn't that sound? Well, they don't make them the same way anymore. So I don't mind having that conversation with people about like vintage gear versus new gear, because that's really where that I'm enamored by this sound. It's like, when was the record made?
Yeah.
You have to be honest about what it is that
what
you're looking for.
What gear was available at the time, sure.
And so I just sort of said, I need something reliable. I need something that as an endorsee, I can go like, look, go buy this. It's great. I love it. And I went and played all the other heads that were available, that have been available, and said, this is the one. And
Orange Mace, great shit, man.
Yeah, it is. And the funny thing was, I kept playing my SVT cabinet for another year before I got this. And some of the people that play this go, you might not like this. And I plugged it in, and the funny thing was, it was exactly what I needed for the P90s. It just smoothed out that tone, so it was like, oh, I now sit in the mix perfect. Now Brian's going back to humbuckers, and I'm going. So now one P90, one humbucker, and I'm like, well, just what am I going to have an Ampeg cabinet over there? No, I'll stay here.
So I'm guessing you're just running one of the heads, and one's a backup, maybe.
Yeah, one's a backup. Cool. It just looks better like that, or confusing.
Just throwing this at you out of curiosity, because I've never personally owned an Orange, but I've played in lots of bands with dudes that do own Oranges, and the little symbols instead of words, little fucking alien hieroglyphs on there, right. Throw me off. Did it take you a minute to really dial it in?
Just squeeze the peanut.
Just squeeze the peanut.
That's all I ever got. Squeeze the peanut.
It's so fun. And then the orange cab here is a lot skinnier than a SVT as well.
It is, but it's deeper.
Is it an 810?
It is. Oh. So it's narrower width-wise, but deeper by like 4 inches. But the truth is, this is what SVTs used to be. Now, like, you're like, why doesn't this sound the same? And so, just buy an Orange. Just do yourself a favor.
And you as well, no effects at all?
No, I've you know, when I got the Epiphone, when I got the mm-hmm. Jack Cassidy, I did have to run a little EQ, because sure. I was like, I can't make this thing sound good. So what, I routed it down and put a P-Bass pickup in it. That's what eventually happened to my Jack Cassidy's. And then I didn't need anything. And for a while I had a fuzz for a couple of songs that had fuzz in the recording. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't care about that. Yeah. It's like, man. So I'm not a big pedal person.
So you, like Mike and Brian, are relying on front of house to handle any kind of changes? Because, like, I don't know, for example, like Sorrow's got a real clean bass tone in the intro. Fuck Armageddon's got a cool thing going on.
I know that Ron, like, I have no mic ever in front of my speakers. So Ron's only taking a direct signal from the back. And
so this is just for you on stage?
This is just
to
for
feel
me.
It.
Yeah, gotcha. And for looks.
Yeah,
it's
looks
pretty.
Fucking cool.
Yeah. he everything he gets out of the back is just pretty much pre-EQ, and he does whatever he does out there, and that's why he's been here for 30 years, because he's that guy.
Hey.
Right.
The dude's good at his job, keep him around, right?
Totally.
What's up with this backup here, this Schecter?
This was a main for a while. It's a hybrid of a 63 AV Fender body.
Oh, okay.
That so came out a couple years ago. But the neck on the 63s and the current 60s, they're just too wide for me.
Right. They don't have that PB.
They're flat and wide, and I talked to my friends at Michael at Fender, mm-hmm. and I said, I can't with that neck. and I stumbled upon this at the time. It is still an all black Schecter from Texas that was I found it online like in Minneapolis for $400, and I bought it that night. I was like, buy. It showed up in a couple of days, and it was nice, but I'm not an all black player, goth guy. And I thought, I like the color.
I do too.
I like the color.
Classic.
But I like this neck, and so I ordered the Badass Bridge online, which is probably a forgery. And
did you get it off Amazon or something?
Yeah. And then I was like, it's probably not real, so whatever. But I put this neck on it because this neck is closer to like a 70s P bass.
Totally.
Which the, you know, the 77 and my 78 are the two most main basses that I would be playing. But this new record, Carlos really liked my 64. We kind of A-beat everything, and he goes, play that 64. And I'm like, really? And it's stock. And he's like, that's the sound. So almost that entire Age of Unreason is a 64 stock piece.
It's really great working with an awesome producer that can open you up to things that you're not already doing.
I'm kind of sitting in a room and he's in there hearing the mix the way I'm on stage hearing the mix. Like when everybody goes in ears, and I mean everybody, have you ever noticed a band where everybody's on in ears and the stage mix is so horrible because no one knows what's really happening right on stage? They're all like, this is rad.
It sounds perfect to my ears.
It's so rad out here, dude. So, when he told me like it's sitting really well in the mix, that's his job.
I believe him. Yeah, totally. All right, before I let you go, what was it like working with Rundgren? Was it weird? Was it tricky?
It was weird.
I love the record. I mean,
I love the record too.
Not my favorite Bad Religion tones, obviously, but
no, I think that was the thing. What Todd was very early indoctrinator of the computer, and so we showed up with our backline getting ready to make a record, and he said, "You don't need any of your amps," and we're like, "What? This is
weird.
Okay." And we went into a barn, and we just plugged into little digital IOs. And he threw a bunch of mics on the drums, literally, and said,
so that's why your America sounds so different. Okay.
Right. And so it was all amp farm and triggers. Everything was amp farm and triggers. There were no amps. There was nothing.
Luckily, the songs really, really carry that record.
I think that it was an interesting look into the future.
Right.
In the sense of, here's what's possible.
Yeah.
I think that where I sort of, with my thing with Rick, where I sort of said, this is not tenable for me, was that he has an amazing monitor system. And I mean, ones with a lot of zeros at the end of it as in speakers.
Gotcha.
And we're mixing, and I said, this is not what anybody owns. Nobody.
Right, they're not going to hear this in their car.
No, ever. Yeah, one is ever going to hear this the way you're hearing this. And so we had an impasse about that, and then the record went to Bob Clearmouth.
12-year-old Perry being skating to that record his
right.
whole life.
Right, so
is not
I think that was worse. So I was like I was not opposed to nor into the digital recording idea, but I was opposed to this idea of mixing it in this environment that was in no one would ever hear it like that. So
completely sterile.
But I mean, it was fun, and it was Hawaii, and I didn't care, and I played golf every day, and I literally didn't go to the studio and just went to the beach. And this was pre-cell phone, so no one could get a hold of me. And it was like, where's Bentley? He's like, fuck, I don't know. I just at the beach.
Not a bad fucking life.
No, when Greg said I called Todd Rundgren and he's going to produce the record, and I'm like, I'm not going back to upstate New York. I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. No, he lives in Hawaii. It's going to be great. I go, yeah, when do we start?
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Jay, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this and you and 40 years of my favorite music and you guys continuing to do this. It fucking rules. If you guys have not heard The Age of Unreason, please go pick it up. It's awesome. After you do that, come home, get on the internet, subscribe to our YouTube channel and all that happy horse shit.
Do
get
all
on
that.
Our Instagram. Keep getting guitar content. Come see Bad Religion on this tour.
Do that. Buy a shirt.
Buy a shirt. Buy 10. See you guys later.